Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Richard House, who is the author of Between Now and When, How My Death Became My Made My Life Worth Living, A True Story. Dr. House and I share a lot in common. We are both surgeons. We both have had throughout our life a small, still voice that has very interesting instructions for us that lead us in unexpected directions. And he has written a really wonderful book about spiritual awakening and spiritual guidance. And I'm real pleased to have him on the show. Welcome, Dr. House.
Well, thanks for having me, Susan.
So, would you like to give our listening audience a little bit of information about your background and how your death made your life worth living?
Well, sure. I think probably it'd be good to start with how things are now, because the book is relates so much sort of otherworldly stuff that people always wonder what the heck I'm doing now.
Right.
But I'm still practicing medicine. I did ENT, ear, nose, and throat, for about 15 years, and I've been doing medical acupuncture ever since.
Great.
And I live on a small farm with family and take care of animals and keep bees and all that. So that is the foundation, or in terms of my book title, Now. The when part is the interesting part, where I was led on a almost unbelievable journey around the world. And as you say, a small, still voice was led me on this journey. And with each step, I started learning about how things work.
Well, let's start back when you had the problem that led to your death at 33. Actually, the teenager part where you were told that you would die at 33 is pretty interesting as well.
Yes, and what it all began actually when I was 7 years old. I was standing underneath a tall cedar tree that my grandfather had planted, and all of a sudden I experienced this wonderful sensation of being one with everything that there is. Now, as a child, it's what the Buddhists call Satori. But as a child, of course, I didn't know what to do with that. That was the very first indication that that I was going to live a life that was a little bit different than most. And what I did is, from that point forward, I considered myself not only to be a little kid, but to also have this vastness, this oneness that was also part of my persona. And so I had sort of a dual identity for quite a while. But what you're talking about is an experience that happened when I was between 12 and 13 years old. And I was actually making a drawing of a Christian cross, of all things, and all of a sudden this message came into my head. It wasn't exactly words, but it was more like a sort of like email or brain mail that that I knew somehow or other was coming from God. And this message was, as you say, that I was going to die at the age of 33. Now, of course, as a teenager, we all teenagers think we're immortal, right?
Right.
So, I sort of brushed this sort of alarming prophecy aside and picked up my skateboard and kept right on going, you know. So that was the beginning of sort of the events that led up to, in fact, my death at the age of 33. What happened, I was a good student and was admitted to Butler University after high school. which is in Indianapolis. And there I learned two important things that would define the rest of my life. And the first was how to drink. And the second was romantic love. And I'm here to tell you the combination of those two things diminished my interest in English 101 a great deal.
Right.
So you may be interested in this. I had planned to be a dentist because my father was a dentist, and I, to tell you the truth, what I really liked was the smell of his clean hands, and I thought, man, I'd like to do that too. And so my grades at Butler were not really up to it. I had a 2-3 acume at the end of my sophomore year, and once again, this small voice spoke to me and said, you shouldn't be a dentist, you should be a doctor. And I had not considered that at all. I was not interested in medicine. I was kind of afraid of sick people in hospitals, and so it wasn't anything that came from my own mind. I was very certain about that. But the interesting thing, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, Susan, is when we get a message that truly is divine in origin, there is a feeling that comes with it that is joyful and blissful and, in this case, exciting. I thought, whoa, well, if God wants me to be a doctor, he's got a big job ahead of him.
He's got to open some doors with that GPA, Some miracles have to happen.
that's the way I viewed it. And
that's right.
So
well, that's how you know you're on the right path when they do happen,
You're right. And, you know, I was kind of hesitant about believing all this, but after I really I resigned from the fraternity and I quit seeing my girlfriend as much and maybe even quit drinking a little as much at least, but by the time it was time to apply to medical school, my acume was somewhere between 2.7 and 2.9. And I presented myself for an interview, and I had been an encyclopedia salesman during the summers, and I guess that skill is what allowed me to sell myself, and by God, I was admitted.
Great.
Now, that's when I started trusting this small voice. I thought, wow, if you can pull that off, that's pretty amazing. So, yes.
Well, what happened next?
Well, to fast forward a bit, because we don't have to get bogged down in details, I go through this in some detail in the book, but I did very well in medical school and developed a true love for surgery. And my family has been in the surgical profession for a long time. And so I had a dream of joining my family's clinic. And so I applied myself and did well in residency out at L.A. County Hospital in Los Angeles. And so all those things went well. Got married, had a child, I was living the life of a gentleman doctor out in practice and, you know, had the fancy cars and the big house and the housekeeper and, you know, all that. But my good friend Jack Daniels had a lot to say about what was going to happen next. I was drinking more and more and getting sicker and sicker. And for
but
the
doctor. But you diagnosed yourself when you looked at your belly button.
I did. you know, we all spend time on the cirrhosis ward. In my case, it was at the veterans in Indianapolis. And I knew exactly what a spider hemangioma was. And I looked at my own swollen belly, and I saw a spider hemangioma. And I thought, oh, my God, I've got cirrhosis. And so you know what I did? I just pulled my T-shirt down over it and said, I got to forget about that.
That's right.
That's what alcohol does. It creates a sort of system of denial so that you kind of rationalize away these things that are really dire. And so,
because you knew that was an advanced sign of cirrhosis. That's not an early sign.
That is not an early sign.
That's an advanced sign. Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, I had ascites at that point.
Yeah, right.
And I was starting to get a little yellow tinge to the skin.
Right.
And so it wasn't long before I was vomiting blood.
Right. And you were 33.
And I was 33, wouldn't you know?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you know? And so there I am with all these tubes in and in the ICU. And my doctor comes in. He was a casual acquaintance of mine. And he's, he said, "Tell me, Richard, do you drink?" I said, "Oh, yeah, a little bit here and there, you know."
Yeah.
He said, "Well, I've got some really bad news for you." He said, "You have end-stage cirrhosis and bleeding esophageal varices."
Right.
Now, as you well know, that basically
it's usually
is
fatal if you can't get a liver transplant, you know. It really is. There's not too much you can do.
Precisely. And I knew that. In fact, I had worked with a surgeon that did some porticable shunts for people that had this condition, and they almost all died.
Yeah.
And so when he said that to me, and this was in the days before transplants, you know, I knew that it was truly a fatal condition. And he had been giving me transfusions. I'd had 18 at that point. And he said, "Well, listen, I really don't think there's any point in continuing the transfusions. And with your permission, we will stop them. And you should say your goodbyes and be a day or two, and you'll pass over." And so I said, "Well, fine. That sounds fine to me." And I'll tell you this. I was so sick and had suffered so much and felt guilty about what was going on that here I am at 33, you know, and my life is over, and what are my, what's my wife going to do, you know. So I said, "Yeah, let's just go for it." And so he stopped the transfusions. Now, later that night is an amazing thing happened. It was about 2 or 3 in the morning, as I recall, and all of a sudden, I felt a sensation of comfort, and I think it was the first time that I had ever been comfortable in my life, and it was such a wonderful and welcome feeling, and it later grew in intensity until all of a sudden, I felt this sort of wondrous bliss, and at about that point, I started separating from my body. And you've probably heard this from other people that have had similar experiences, but I started drifting away from the body and could actually look down at myself there, you know, this banana colored person.
Right.
It was so incredibly sick. And yet here I was, feeling this wondrous sense of peace and joy and even a little tinge of excitement. I was just so happy to be where I was. And then once again, this small, still voice, as you describe it, spoke to me, and the words were this: "You will heal and work for me."
Yeah.
And at that point, I knew it was God, and there was no question about it. I didn't question what was occurring, and I think probably if I'd been able to, I would have saluted and said, "Yes, sir."
Right.
So instead of progressing on to this wonderful death experience, and I want to stop right here a minute, Susan. I want to relate this as sort of an important message I have for listeners, that in my view, everyone's death is this way at some point.
Yeah.
No matter how horrific, no matter how unexpected, we eventually reach this point of bliss and joy. And so the death experience is really a wonderful one. And
should not
after
be
I had,
feared at all. Should not be
exactly,
feared.
Exactly, exactly. And so as a matter of fact, when I have patients that are nearing that stage, what I tell them is that dying is perfectly safe.
It is. As Jesus said, we should rejoice when somebody dies and mourn when they're born.
You know, there is a lot of truth to that.
There's a lot of truth to that. That's right.
So what happened, I did drift back into my body, and as soon as I was back in it, I knew for sure that I had been healed, just like the message said. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't more than 2 or 3 days, and the bleeding had stopped. My my labs started coming back to normal, and another 2 or 3 days, and I was out of the hospital. And, of course, my doctors couldn't believe it, and I was
that just doesn't happen.
Myself. No, it doesn't.
Well, you know, I did a show on scalar energy, and scalar energy coming from, you know, a higher dimension can heal the body of anything. I mean, there's all sorts of spontaneous remissions reported. And even if you do go on and die, can keep the body from decaying for hundreds of years. And that's what scalar energy can do. I mean, that's what it is. And so when that, whatever that, you know, that portal of energy is open, and that was, you know, you were told it was going to open, and it did, because you said, you heard you would be healed. And there's nothing that it cannot heal you from.
You know, I have not heard that term, but I absolutely agree with the thought behind it. The higher dimensional energy is so powerful that there is literally nothing that could prevent it from doing what needs to happen. You're so right.
It can reconstruct anything. I mean, there's a book that Noetic Science put out called Spontaneous Remission, 100 Documented Cases. I mean, completely malformed joints, you know, with total dysplasia of the hip, then became normal. I mean, that's remodeling
incredible.
Bone. Yeah.
That's incredible.
I mean, as a surgeon, you know that's just things that you wouldn't even think could happen. I think we all have a perfected template at the higher levels. You know, you studied Meyer Baba. I did, too. I actually went to his retreat in Myrtle Beach and read for days everything he had written on this. But basically there's a higher template, and then, you know, as it comes down dimensionally, we develop disease and problems, but the template's always there. And I think that template just is used to restore what we should be in the third dimension. I think that's how it works. It's a blueprint.
Well, I like that idea. And, of course, as Meyer Baba talked about sanskaras, or the impressions that we accumulate during life, that can either be positive or negative. And so much of our disease comes from acquiring these negative sanskaras that muck up the works.
That's right. That's right.
So if they are cleared and balanced, then what happens is our consciousness ascends to a different level. And so we are actually living in a different plane even as we walk the earth as an ordinary human.
And I do want to mention, too, Meyer Baba's writings are available online for free. Anybody can read them, and they're really remarkable, as you know.
Well, you know, I didn't know who it was that was dragging me around the world. It was him.
I wanted to ask you something. When I was guided, just like you were, same voice, to go to Meyer Baba's place in Myrtle Beach, and then I met the main Australian who Meyer Baba had appeared to, and then he did all of Australia's, you know, coordinating with Meyer Baba's center there. Now, he gave a speech. He gave a talk when I was there, so I actually met him.
And which one was it?
Well, I don't know. I don't remember his name, but, you know, you talk in your book about people high up in Meyer Baba's, you know, group in Australia. Well, he was the guy that was the head of it.
Oh, you were talking about Bill, yeah. Sure.
So that's really amazing that I met him. You know, he gave a talk that day that I was there. It was a great talk. You know, all
He's
the miracles that
guy.
Occurred. He is.
Oh, yeah, and I spent a great deal of time with him in Australia. And the way I got there, of course, I outlined in the book in some detail. Mm-hmm. And it was, once again, it was pretty magical stuff. And, you know, when I reread this, my own book, I think, my God, did this really happen?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Bill LePage that gave
yes,
the talk.
Yes, I think it was Bill, right.
Yeah, and
wonderful stories.
Wonderful stories, and his wife, Diana, also is mm-hmm. a delightful soul.
Yeah, so she was there as well, yeah.
Yeah, she's
so that's
a great
really
artist.
Strange, yeah. I wanted to mention one of the voices that I had. Well, I had two that were very important. I was having a chili dog at midnight supper my third year of medical school, and that voice said to me, "You're going to be a plastic surgeon." And I
wow.
looked over at Barry. I was having dinner with Barry, one of my friends, and I said, "Barry, I'm going to be a plastic surgeon." And his reply is, "You don't know anything about plastic surgery," because, of course, we hadn't had it yet. And then the next time, well, then I did become a plastic surgeon. And then the next time I was, I joined a group in Riverdale, which is south of Atlanta. And I went into I was meditating regularly at that time. And I went into meditation and I heard a voice that said, quit your job. So I did. And I was off for 5 months where I meditated, studied with a group of like-minded individuals, and developed spiritual sight and hearing. And then at 5 months, a friend of mine in the military called me wanting me to go to Russia with him. I'd been a major in the Air Force. And I told him I couldn't go to Russia because I wasn't working. And he said, "Oh, well, in that case, will you come join me?" He was a general surgeon in Decatur, Georgia. And then he got called to Desert Storm. So you see how perfect it is? I took over his practice when he was called for Desert Storm. He had to, you know, go and, I don't know, he was out probably about however long, at least 3 or 4 months. So it's all perfect, but you have to follow the direction. And it's not, there's not much given to you except quit your job or, you know, you're going to do this or go to Australia or whatever. It's just really wild.
And here we are, two dedicated, serious doctors talking about this stuff, which
isn't
can only
great?
Be described as woo-woo. Wow.
Yeah, but you know what? It really is helpful in surgery. I tell people all the time that, you know, the best doctors, the best fighter pilots, the best, you know, inventors, the best engineers have access to this information. Because when you really need to solve a problem, and in surgery, you know what I mean, you can hear what
right.
to do. It's
you
quite
know,
important.
There, it's like being in the zone. That description is used a lot in sports, but it's the same thing in medicine. We're actually in a different zone where mm-hmm. everything works just the way it should.
Yeah. And you know that if there is going to be a problem, you're going to know the answer to get out of it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's my knowing, because I still operate 3 days a week, sometimes, you know, 17 hours a day. I mean, our operations can go a long time. But you see, my job was to take care of all the women with breast implant problems. And I went to the Sedona, and I was guided to the airport vortex, and I didn't even know there was an airport vortex. I had to stop at a gas station and ask where it was. And when I was there, I was given the vision of the center I was to build, and I was told that it would be for the disasters. Okay, isn't that interesting? For the disasters. And so this center now, women come from all over the world to get treated for defective breast implants, mold in saline implants, and chemical toxicity from silicone.
Wow, you're right on the forefront of disaster correction.
That's right, because medicine denies this exists, as you know. Medicine doesn't want any part of it, even though they caused it, which is kind of funny. But anyway, so I wrote a book called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, which didn't make me very popular, but that's okay. As you know, people like you and I really don't care what other people think, so it's
well,
okay.
Well, you're right. We have a very thick skin.
That's right. Well, it comes with the territory of knowing that you have access to information that will keep you perfectly safe and secure and will guide you in the best, highest possible way. So you don't have to listen to anybody else. You don't have to have self-doubt. You just don't have to.
Well, I like that, yeah. And the worry and fear start diminishing, and we're living
in... You have a sense of peace.
Exactly.
Sense of peace, yeah.
Exactly right.
And you talk about that in your book. You talk about, you know, that wave of energy coming over you in the most unlikely places, you know, when you were deathly ill or when you had just found out that your wife was unfaithful to you. You know, just really amazing rescues, you know, from this energy. Just
you know, I'd like you. To continue in that vein for just a moment, mm-hmm. if I may.
Sure.
Because I think this is important for listeners, and this is one of my major messages, if there is such a thing. After about a year after the near-death experience, I had my first really magical experience, as you indicate, and I was sitting in the den looking down at the floor in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden the floor tiles became luminescent with this mm-hmm. inner beauty that was so amazing and so beautiful that it... It was shocking, and I thought to myself, how can floor tiles be so beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that experience only lasted a few moments, but it was the first of many such experiences where I started spending time in a different level of existence where things are so beautiful, and
right.
even the most mundane of things have this just captivating appearance and sound and smell. And some people might call it the fourth dimension, although I wouldn't actually mm-hmm. name it that. But my point is that I discovered that there is an underlying infrastructure to our gross world that mm-hmm. is well hidden, and that only occasionally are people allowed to see it. Now, the reason I mention this is that it is my true belief that since we now are in between two ages, the last being the age of Kali, as they call it in the East, mm-hmm. or the age of Pisces, and that we are soon to enter the age of Aquarius, which right. is going to be with us at some point. Now, it's my belief that that beautiful world that I had glimpses of is actually what we are all going to experience consciously when the new age dawns. And the most wonderful part of that experience of the subtle world is that there is no fear, and there is no worry, mm-hmm. and there is no aggression, and the so-called deadly sins have somehow been evaporated. It's just not there, and so it's the end of war. You know, various traditions talk about this. I think
they
in the
do.
Christian religion, it's called the rapture or heaven on earth.
Right.
And and by golly, it's going to happen. So that's my message.
Yeah, and it's not too far away either. We had a message from Jesus about this. And Jesus it usually speaks in metaphors, and so he said it would be like this. He said it would be like popcorn popping. He said at first a few people have it, like yourself. You have a glimpse of it, and then more and more people have it. And then finally a whole bunch of people have it, and then, you know, it's like then there's, you know, people afterwards have it. And he said that all of our institutions would change. And he said it was like driving a flatbed truck with mattresses in the back, with one being, say, government, and one being healthcare, and one being, you know, law. And we would suddenly hit a bump, and everything would go up, but we wouldn't really realize it at the time, but we could only realize it by looking in the rearview mirror. But what I think Jesus was trying to say is that all of our institutions will also elevate. You know, we're going to have natural health care rather than pharmaceutical health care. You know, we'll have all sorts of other tools in our toolbox, other, like acupuncture and you know, functional medicine and all of the things that really work rather than just, having people on 15 drugs with a bunch of side effects. So, you know, these are all promises for a better future.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And our current medical paradigm is ridiculously doomed.
It is, isn't it?
Yes. But I, you know, I'll take that one step farther and say that when we do enter that magical new world, the influences that cause illness will be negated to the point of almost being obliterated. And so that our natural state of physical health, emotional health, and spiritual health will just be there. And so there will be very little need for the likes of you and me.
Right, right. Well, I think this place that we're going is could be called the New Earth. And from what I can tell from, I've done many other interviews on this, obviously, from other channels of information. It's similar to where the Mayans went. You know, the Mayans disappeared, and other groups have disappeared. I mean, fairly large groups of people have just disappeared, and there's no explanation of where they went. But yet, the channeled information is that they went to the New Earth. So they're already there. We're, you know, the rest of the Earth is just lagging behind.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Wow.
But, you know, that, I mean, if you study where the Mayans went, they disappeared like in the twinkling of an eye. And they disappeared because there was a big threat coming that they couldn't fight. You know, they would have been destroyed.
The Europeans, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And they were all called together by their spiritual leaders, and they all probably went into a meditative state as a group and then just, they weren't there anymore. They were there. Well, you and I understand higher dimensional levels because we've experienced them. But they, you know, they're really, this is just one radio station on a whole spectrum of stations. And you can, your awareness can shift. I mean, I woke up in my college room and I wasn't asleep. I woke up looking at a 7-foot angel with golden light throughout the room. My perception shifted to a higher dimension. That wasn't third dimensional reality. You know.
Wow.
But once you see that, I quit being an agnostic at that point.
Yeah. That'll do it.
That'll do it. That's right. You're going to believe me or your lying eyes, you know? That's what the fighter pilots used to say. Anyway, so but, you know, I think that when you need a little nudge, you're given one. And a lot of times, seeing these angels, I talked to Doreen Virtue on my radio show, and she said that's the encounters of the fourth kind, you know, the actual kind. And she said that people with spiritual, like, leadership positions often have that happen to them, that they see something like an angel in a way that they can't deny, and then that shifts them into a different plane. So,
well, that sounds right, yeah. Those of us that are doing this, and there are many, I think that's another good point to make, that it's not just you and me and a few others.
Oh, no.
This phenomenon is occurring all over the world, all over the universe.
It's like popcorn, Richard. It's like popcorn. we're just popping early. That's all.
Yeah, I love that metaphor.
Yeah.
So, and this stuff, once one of us comes online, so to speak, it's wonderfully contagious, so that the people in our lives start picking up the same kind of energy. And they in turn spread it and so on and so forth. And so it will eventually achieve a critical mass and boom, we'll be there.
Yeah, and I would encourage people, and I know you would too, to have a meditation practice, even if it's, you know, just once a week with a group of friends, or, you know, that works because everybody agrees to meditate at the same time and you don't forget to do it. Or, you know, 15 minutes a day if you can do that. It's just important right now.
Yeah, I do encourage that, and I certainly practice it myself. In fact, I find that the most spiritually active time for me is around 4 a.m., so I get up at 3:30 and do my meditation, and then follow it up with another one at 7:30 before I go to bed. Now, it plays hell with your social life, but if you're serious about this...
That's true.
So we all... And that brings up an interesting point, because as physicians or as healers of any kind, the energy that we express defines how successful we're going to be with people. And so we have to work on our own faults and character flaws so that we can help others more effectively. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I think that that's true. I think that you're given opportunities every day to take a look at things that you need to improve.
Exactly. And, you know, some people say, well, I'm still consumed with all the non-virtues, you know. I'm still angry and impatient and selfish. And what I like to point out to people is that the non-virtues, if you want to call them that, are the pathway to the virtues. That we cannot have wisdom without first being ignorant, and that we can't have love in our hearts without first hating, and so on and so forth. So,
and isn't it wonderful that they know that they have these problems? Because isn't awareness that you have the problem the first step to getting over it? I mean, the majority of people are not even aware that they have these problems. They just have them.
Well, you know, you're right about that. So we're talking about different levels. When you hit about the fifth grade, then, you know, spiritually, that's when these things become an issue.
Right, right. That's very true. Well, let's talk a little bit about something that's coming up. I want to see if you've gotten any information on it. It was about 3 weeks ago. We do a meditation session every Sunday. We've been doing it since 1990, so it's a long-term meditation group. And in it, I found myself channeling Michael the Archangel, and who said that in mid-September there would be an energy wave coming through that was going to be quite interesting and change things quite a bit. And then, of course, we all looked at each other and said, well, what was that about? And then on the Internet, I started getting all these emails from all these different sources of similar information coming in, saying that there would be an energy wave in mid-September. So it's coming up, and it should be quite exciting. Have you gotten any information on that?
You know, not directly. One of the things that I'm careful about is not saying things that I haven't experienced. I have not, but I had a close friend that called me and said the same thing.
Okay. Well, watch out for mid-September. It should be really interesting.
Yeah, he's an astrologer, and he said there was something about the planetary alignments that were going to be quite notable right about then.
Yeah. Well, it's an energy evidently coming in from the galactic center, you know, part of this. I think the ascension energies are coming, are at least through many different sources, they say they're coming from the galactic center through the sun. And so the sun, you really should sign up for spaceweather.com, because they'll send you emails about all the interesting things happening with the sun, which I think there are going to be some interesting things happening. And so you can keep track of that. And then just, you know, I think that, well, what we were told is that you might be sleeping for long periods of time. You might be, you know, withdrawing and meditating more and going within more. And that these energy waves are really the mechanism, you know, the actual hardcore mechanism of the ascension. So it's starting.
And well, the sun energy, of course, is plays a very important part in this whole thing. You know, for a while there, a lot of people felt that the Mayan forecast of a solar storm was going to end everything a few years back. You remember that?
Yeah. Well, I didn't think that. I just thought it was like an opening of a, you know, or a turning of a, I don't know, a turning of something to allow these energies in. That's probably when they started coming in, I would think.
And, of course, the solar energy, the electromagnetic stuff that does hit the Earth really does change things. And so
it does, yeah.
There's a physicality to that that's very interesting. You know, there was a solar flare, when was it, 1992, that knocked out a third of the electrical grid in Canada.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, and generators won't protect you. That's what's interesting. You know, it can knock out the generator, too.
Anything that's got a microchip in it.
Right.
You know, which
and unfortunately, everything does now.
Everything does.
We need those old-time generators before microchips.
And any car built before 1984 will still function.
Yeah, there you go.
But I actually wrote I am finishing up a novel right now that has that as a basis, where I'm sort of including the change in consciousness in a fictional work, but it begins mm-hmm. with a solar flare that knocks out all the microchips. And I'll tell you, if we lose the internet for any longer than about 3 days, I figure that's the apocalypse right there.
There it is. That's true.
So.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what comes, because this, I think, mid-September is the first major wave, and then there'll be other waves, of course. But you know, basically, what we were told is that this energy, if your chakras are spinning in the right direction, that this energy will make you more peaceful, more calm, less fear, you know, kind of make you healthier. We've even been told that your aging will slow down. You know, you will even look younger. But if your chakras are spinning the wrong way, it will intensify physical illness and emotional illness. So it's kind of an interesting separation. I think, you know, you go back to what Jesus said. He said that there would be a time when the wheat was separated from the chaff. And I think this is it. I think this is what he was talking about.
Well, I do agree with you that it comes in waves. And if this is the first wave, a significant wave, then we should all welcome it, even if it is a negative experience. Because when the chakras are not functioning well, nothing else is going to work right. And so we need to have those chakras clear so that we can experience higher dimensional energies as they come our way.
We do, yeah.
So, you know, as you know, if someone has an explosive awakening of kundalini energy, it certainly isn't always pleasant, is it?
Well, you had that experience, though, didn't you?
Yes,
wasn't
I did.
Wasn't that the head jerking back? You want to talk about that? Because I've never experienced that. I, you know, the worst thing that happens to me is when I'm in the process of really going through spiritual changes, my magnesium requirements go way up. So I have to take a lot of magnesium or I get muscle cramps. But what you had was different.
Well, there's
that
a combination.
Was posturing.
Oh, it was. Okay. It was in meditation, and I had never expected any such thing. I was in Hawaii at the time, meditating many times each day, maybe you know, all through the day and night for 6 months. And I'm here to tell you, if you do that, all sorts of things are going to happen. And so, in my case, after a while, after some fairly intense experiences that were not at all unpleasant, this one sort of cleansing began with my head snapping back to the extent that it was incredibly painful within meditation. And you're right, it was a cleansing and a very difficult experience that went on for quite some time. And even today, occasionally I have that same thing happen. Because, you know, our chakras are sort of like any energy system that periodically gets sludged up, particularly if we do healing work with people, because those of us that work with others on a one-to-one basis many times take on the negative energies of the people that we're working on. And, of course, that sludges up our own chakra system. But
at any rate, you'll
have to read the book. I've had a couple of people tell me that it was excruciating to read that segment. And I said, well, it was even more excruciating to experience it.
Well, I want to tell you, Richard, that your book is really a delight to read. You've got a real talent for, you know, bringing out all sorts of things, in terms of communication and just you're really a wonderful writer. And
thank you so much. I'll tell you a secret, though. I was a lousy writer when I started it, but maybe to follow it up for just five seconds. The book was 250 some pages long. I actually wrote 4,000 pages before I got those.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is with writing. You start off being an amateur, and pretty soon the muse starts, or that small voice starts guiding your hand.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time, but thank you so much.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think that anyone on a spiritual quest or beginning a meditative practice would do well to read your book. It's a great guidebook for how you got through it.
Yeah, and, you know, not everyone traipses all over the world like I did.
It
doesn't mean that the individual journey is not as important or as dramatic or as necessary. You know, we can't all go spend 6 months in Hawaii and get away with it.
Right.
Every one of us is on a journey, whether we know it or not.
It's true. And there are guideposts along the way, and that's what the book is all about, is recognizing those guideposts and then having the courage to follow them.
You're right. The signs that show up. And as you say, I would encourage people to begin a meditative practice. And just as a very brief thing, I'll say it doesn't matter what you do in that 15 or 20 minutes or longer. The important thing is that you carve that time out of your busy day. Mm-hmm. And what you're doing is surrendering yourself to spirit. And so if you are willing to do that on a daily basis, magical things will happen.
Yeah, it will. That's true. Well, would you like to give your contact information?
Oh, sure. It's real simple. It's richardhousemd.com. That's my website, and it will take you right to Amazon to order the book, or the book is on the shelf at many Barnes & Nobles and other book retailers. But richardhousemd.com is probably the quickest way. Or just Google Richard House. That'll work, too.
Right, right. Well, Richard, if you're ever in Atlanta, especially on a Sunday, we have the meditation group at 8 p.m. here at the center in Dunwoody. We'd love to have you come down. And
wow,
if you'd like to do noetic science, I don't know how far you are from us, but we do noetic science every third Thursday other than December. You could speak at noetic science about your experiences in your book.
Well, thanks very much for the invitation. And occasionally I do get down to Atlanta for, you know, the medical stuff. But if so, I'll give you plenty of warning.
Okay, great. Well, thanks a lot for joining us. I appreciate it.
Well, it's been lovely chatting with you, and I can't believe all the synchronicities in our story.
It is, yeah. It's wonderful, isn't it? We must be marching to the same drummer, I think.
I think we are. We are truly blessed.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for
having
me.
Oh, you're welcome. We've been interviewing Dr. Richard House. His book, Between Now and When, is a great journal of his spiritual awakening and journey, and with a lot of really good information in it as well, with what we can expect when we begin a meditative practice and how wonderful the energy is that comes in. Next week we will be interviewing Christopher Vasey, Spiritual Mysteries of the Blood, Its Power to Transform Body, Mind, and Spirit. And then the next week, Kay Taylor, Dating the Messenger, The Untold Story of a Clairvoyant. Thank you very much for joining us. This has been Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.